Nedarim, Perek Dalad, Mishnah Gimel, 4-3. The Mishnah continues to talk about situations in which you have two people, Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven is in a situation where there's a neder in place which forbids him from getting benefit from Shimon, and yet the Mishnah will list additional things that Shimon may do, I'll call it on behalf of Reuven, which are permitted. In other words, they're not considered to be a hana. So to understand this Mishnah, you have to just two basic pieces of background. One is that if Shimon were to do anything at the explicit request of Reuven, that would be considered a hana all to itself. That's the kind of thing you pay for. You pay for someone to do your bidding, and any time that a person acts as a shaliach on your behalf, that would be considered a hana, and that will always be forbidden. Okay, so just that can't be what's happening here. The second thing you have to keep in mind is that we have a principle that mitzvos lav lehenos ninu, that the mitzvahs were not given for the sake of hana'a. When a person does a mitzvah, he may enjoy what he's doing, but that's not considered a hana'a, which would be a legal hana'a. Rather, when a person does a mitzvah or fulfills a mitzvah, he's doing the request of Hashem, acting as a servant, and any hana'a he might get, that's incidental, it's marvelous, but it's not considered to be legal hana'a, the kind of thing you pay for, so to speak. So, with that in mind, the Mishnah gives several examples of things that Shimon can do on behalf of Reuven, even though there's a neder which prohibits Reuven from getting benefit, hana'a, from Shimon. So the first is, it's really continuing on, right, from the previous Mishnah, v'torim es trumaso umasrosav ladato. Shimon may separate his trumos and maestros, his separations of the Kohen and Levium from his agricultural produce, ladato, with his knowledge. So ladato is a side point here, but it's managing a tricky balance. One is not allowed to take trumos and maestros from his friend's produce to give it to a Kohen or Levi without the consent of the owner of the produce. The owner has the rights for Tovos Hana, he can choose which Kohen he wants to give it to, so you can't do it without a green light giving consent from the owner. The tricky business will be if Reuven gave, you know, told Shimon, do me a favor and separate my Trumas Maestros to give it to whoever I'm supposed to want to give it to or who I want to give it to, so then that would be, if Shimon would do it, that would be fulfillment of Reuven's request, he acting as a Shaliach, that would be an Isser of Hana. So that being the case, it has to be a situation in which Reuven's made it clear he doesn't mind his Trumas Maestros getting taken from his produce. You know, maybe he announced the world and he said, you know, something like, you know, whoever wants to separate my Truma, go right ahead. So now he sort of said he's giving consent, but not request something specific from Shimon. So now Shimon can go and do it, and the fact that it's getting done and sort of saving Reuven time or something, so what? It's a mitzvah, mitzvah's lo v'henos nitnu. He wasn't fulfilling any specific request, not acting as a shliach, and therefore it's permitted. Also, says the Mishnah, umakrev alav kinei zavin, kinei zavos, kinei yodos, chatos v'shamos. Shimon can offer karbonos on behalf of Reuven, and the truth is it doesn't matter if, of course, that means Shimon's a Kohen, even if Reuven's a Kohen, will be eating from the meat, that wouldn't matter, it's all not relevant. The case of our Mishnah here are particular karbonos in which they're obligatory karbonos, and therefore the chiddush of the Mishnah is, you might have thought that, you know, when Reuven brings his carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, so Shimon the Kohen is sort of working for him or something like that. That's incorrect. Reuven brings his karbonos to the Beis HaMikdash, that ticks his box of requirement, and then Shimon works for Hashem, and Shimon the Kohen will work for Hashem and offer Hashem's child Reuven's karbonos as appropriate. Whoever will eat, it doesn't make a difference anyways. Whatever eating there is from karbonos is incidental. These particular karbonos are obligatory. There's no eating being done to them by the owner, but the Kohen may eat. These specific examples here are kinei zavin, kinei zavos. Those are a pair of birds. A kan is a pair of birds, and olen achatas, which is brought for a zav or a zava, who are at the end of their tuma period after 7 days. The point here, as well as kinei yodos, a woman who gave birth, also after she reaches the point where she gives tahara, after 40 or 80 days, the point is that these people, the zav, zav, and yoledes, are all called mechusrei kippurim. They lack full atonement. They haven't finished their whole really tahara process, and they cannot eat korbanos yet. They can't go into the Beis HaMikdash yet until their offerings are brought. So the point is here that Shimon, in offering the kinim or the of the zavzava or yoledes, is enabling that person now to have the benefits of eating korbanos or going to the Beis HaMikdash. So you might think that's a benefit that Shimon the Kohen is giving to Reuven the zav or whatever it is. So you might have thought that, but you're thinking correctly. This is all how the system works. This is working for Hashem. This is doing mitzvahs all the innocent new, and therefore there's no problem with Shimon the Kohen doing these things on behalf of Reuven. Even he's getting this benefits potentially. Same goes for chatos and ashamos, sin offerings and guilt offerings, whenever those are obligatory. They have to be brought, but the point is it can be brought by Shimon, even though Shimon has this restriction on Shimon giving hana to Reuven. Next says the Mishnah, umalamdo midrash halachos va'agados. Shimon can teach Reuven these areas of halacha. Midrash here, in the mind of Chazal, this word refers to like midrashe halacha, like the Mechilta, Sefra, Sefri. These are drashos on the psukim to understand like the extra things that the psukim are teaching, not the midrash haagada that we're using midrash to mean. Halachos, but it wouldn't make a difference really. It's just that you have to have that pshat because it says agados. Also the Mishnah agados would be those kind of things. So halachos are things that are halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. So again, no psukim involved, just as a tradition. So passing on the tradition. Agados are like what we would call midrashim, so to speak. Things that are, you know, homiletical, that are, or, you know, whatever, ethical teachings of the rabbis, supposed legal teachings, and so on. All that's okay because one isn't allowed to charge money for teaching those aspects of Torah. So therefore, he's not, like, so to speak, saving money or gaining money. It's not a financial benefit. That would be hana. And also the fact, even if he enjoys the learning, so what? Again, mitzvahs of lehenos nitnu, that applies to mitzvahs. Talmud Torah is a mitzvah. The fact that you're learning Torah and enjoying it, that's wonderful, but it's not a restricted hana that would be forbidden by any neder. Avalo yilamdenu mikra. What Shimon cannot do is teach Reuven how to read psukim. According to most, the point here is on the what's called the pisuk tamim. You can charge someone to teach you how to read the pisukim, the verses correctly, with their proper like violation and cantillation notes and so on. Most from the pisuk tamim, it's actually whatever. Either whether it's derais or rabbanan, it doesn't matter. The point is the teaching of this Torah is permitted. You're permitted to charge money for it, and that being the case. By saving the money but not having to pay a regular teacher and getting it, you know, for free is essentially a hana, something you would always pay money for, and therefore it's forbidden for Shimon to do to Reuven. That being the case, if you're talking about a place and time where people do not charge for that, and you could get the teaching for free, so there Reuven's not saving money, therefore it would be permitted to teach even Mikra, the Pesukim. The Mishnah goes on and says, Aval melamed hu esbana vesbanos of mikra. Shimon may teach Reuven's children, his sons and daughters, even mikra, even the psukim, because although that's the kind of thing you can charge for, the thought is he could find someone who wouldn't charge for it, and therefore the fact that Reuven's teaching his children is not necessarily saving him money, and therefore it's permitted. That's the thought of the Mishnah here. It's interesting that the Mishnah refers to teaching Reuven's daughters, benosav, because there's clearly not a mitzvah to teach your benos, your daughter's Torah. And in fact, the Gemara in Sota and the Rambam Pasan, the Halacha, you're not supposed to, you're not allowed to teach your daughter Torah. So that's a little strange. And therefore, no Chiddush. Of course, Shimon could teach Reuven's daughter Torah because that's not something he would ever have to pay for. That being the case, there are many Girsos versions of the Mishnah that the words Ves Benosav simply aren't there, and probably that's really how it seems in the older versions. That's probably the case. The Mishnah goes on and says, Vezan es ishtov es banav. Shimon is allowed to provide food for Reuven's wife and his sons, his children. The idea here is like that we saw in the previous Mishnah, to pay off a debt is permitted. What's already been incurred, and Reuven has this financial obligation already to provide for his wife and children, technically children only until the age of 6 years old, but it's permitted at all events, because even if he's paying off a financial obligation that Reuven has, but that's permitted if it's like considered like a chov, an existing obligation. That's true, even though there's an obligation for Reuven to provide for the food for his children, but since that's an obligation that is existing already, Shimon can do it. However, says the Mishnah, v'lo yazun es behemto, but Shimon may not feed Reuven's animals, because that's a financial benefit. He's saving money, he's getting the benefit of now a fanned up animal, and that was a financial benefit to Hanan. Therefore, even if Reuven's animals are hungry, Shimon can't feed them. Bein tamea, bein tahora, says the Tanakhama, that's true both for tamea, non-kosher animals, and tahora, kosher animals. So a tamea would be like a horse, a tahora would be like a cow. The point is that Shimon can't feed either Reuven's horse or cow, because that actually accrues a benefit to Reuven, the owner. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees, and he says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, zanes a tamea, he says the non-kosher animals, like a horse, Shimon could feed ve'eno zanes a tahora, but not the kosher animals, like the cow. Of course, he agrees that the cow you can't feed because the fatter the cow, the more food there is to go around in terms of meat, and that's everyone's benefit, or the owner's benefit, and Shimon can't benefit the owner, Reuven, so that can't be done. The thought is, however, as we'll see in a moment, you don't eat a horse, so therefore it being fatter is not a benefit. Important to note here, the case is that Rabbi Eliezer is saying in a situation in which the horse has had enough to eat, he's just giving him extra food, that's when it's permitted. Of course, the food is, if the horse has not got enough to eat, so then Shimon is saving Reuven and his money by feeding the horse, and that would be forbidden. But giving extra food is the question. On that, Amru lo, so the rabbis say to Rabbi Eliezer, Ma bein tamei le tahora, why in the world should be a difference between feeding his horse, which is not kosher, and his cow, which is kosher? Amru lehen, she tahora nafsha l'shamayim v'gufa shelo. He says, listen, because when it comes to kosher animals like a cow, nafsha l'shamayim, so its soul goes back to its maker when the cow dies, but gufa, the body, is for the owner to eat. And therefore he benefits from the fatter the carcass, the better. Utameya, but if it's a not kosher animal like the horse, nafsha v'gufa l'shamayim, he can't eat it, so both its soul and its body, so to speak, go back up to heaven. He has no benefit from the corpse of a horse, he can't eat it, so therefore it's permitted. Amru lo, they said, well, not really. Afla tameya nafsha l'shamayim v'gufa l'shlo. The truth is, your poetry aside, the horse, the not kosher animal, of course, yes, its soul goes back to heaven or whatever, but gufa, its body, does belong to him technically. And shim yirtzen, if he wants to, harehu mochr la'akum o machil la'klavim. Not only does Reuven own the carcass of the dead horse, he could sell it. He could sell it to a non-Jew who might eat it, or, I don't know, make it go to the glue factory, or machil la'klavim, he could feed it to his own dogs, and that would be a financial benefit to him. Rabbi Eliezer holds, listen, people don't think in those kind of terms. When the horse is still alive, no one's thinking, oh, I'm feeding it extra food to get it fattened up so I can feed it to the, to the dogs or to the glue factory. And therefore, to the contrary, really, Eliezer is thinking, since you're not eating the horse now, you're fattening it up. Well, who wants a fat horse? The thinner the horse, optimally, trim horse is the most effective for whatever, going places, carrying loads, whatever the story is. Once it's overweight, that's actually a disadvantage. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says it's not a problem. No one has the feeding to the glue factory or to the to the dogs afterwards in mind. Nevertheless, of course, the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, like it basically never is. It's like the Chacham Tanakama. And that being the case, one may not feed his neighbor's food. Sorry, his neighbor's animal's food if there's a nether in place that the neighbor can't get benefit from him, even if it's overfeeding, even if it's a not kosher animal.